am Sarah Coffey, an educator at the National Museum of American History. You're listening to History Explorer, a podcast that lets you investigate questions about history along with our staff. Here at the National Museum of American History, we really love April. This month is our chance to celebrate what is arguably the most quintessentially American music genre, jazz. You may not have realized that April is Jazz Appreciation Month, but I'll bet that you can name some of the great jazz artists. Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, Duke Ellington. These are some names that might spring to mind. But how about John Levy? The name may not ring a bell, but this April, the National Museum of American History chose to highlight and celebrate Levy's life and career as a bassist and as the first Black personal manager in jazz.
The wonderful thing about John is that I use him as a test case a lot because of the fact his life spans pretty much 20 centuries. So he's born in 1912, April 11th, 1912, to be exact. And he lived through the 20th century into the 21st century, and he passed away in 2012, so he was shy of his 100th birthday.
That is Ken Kimmery, the director of the Smithsonian Jazz Masterworks Orchestra. In addition to bringing jazz music to global audiences through the orchestra's performances, Ken also uses the oral histories of jazz artists to explore and promote the historical legacy of jazz. Ken interviewed John Levy in 1994 and says that John's is one of his favorite stories to use when teaching about jazz.
I'm always looking at those points of inspiration, those foundations within the collections there that help me create a program that is not just presenting wonderful music, but has a real strong historical foundation that we can draw from and use to guide us through this process here. And John is one of those individuals that it's very rich. It's, for me, also an opportunity to introduce somebody who hasn't had that marquee name, mm-hmm. but he has represented and played with or managed marquee names, mm-hmm. Anywhere from Nancy Wilson to Joe Williams to Arsenio Hall. So mm-hmm. it's a real broad spectrum there, to playing with Billie Holiday. So it's really, you know, you look at that and you say, this is somebody that, for me, it's a mission to make sure that these individuals are given an opportunity to extend their life beyond just the collections and introduce new audiences to who they are and what they've done. So you think about somebody who had lived that span of time, their life experiences are pretty phenomenal. Then you look at geographically where he was located, and his path through his life talks a lot about Great Migration, Prohibition, segregation, desegregation. Really, is you can unfold a lot of stories that come out of this one gentleman's life, and he has touch points through his life that you can see that he was either involved or around it or had some moment in his life where you can see that it had an impact.
John was born in New Orleans, a city that was segregated at the time.
The first sense of segregation came to me through my godfather, who was French Creole, but very light-skinned. He passed for white, and he would take me into town to shop for me, you know, for a birthday or for whatever holidays. I don't recall the exact holidays, but I do recall the incident of getting on the streetcar and him going all the way up to the front where the motorman was. There was a motorman and a conductor, and they had these signs where you put up in between each section. If there were more white people on the streetcar at the time, then this sign would be moved back. Each seat had a little hole in where you could stick this sign in. And I had to stay behind that sign, and he would go up front, and then he'd come back and make a joke out of it. But I realized then there was a difference, that me being black, I couldn't go past that sign.
That left an impression with him that there was separate but equal. Mm-hmm. You know, we know all the segregation that was going on at the period of time. And I think that was kind of the seed there that carried him through his adult life and recognizing that some things were not right here.
Levy eventually moved from New Orleans to Chicago and began to learn to play music, first on the piano and violin, and later on his instrument of choice, the bass.
He got to a point where developing skills as a bass player, and there's a common thread there. Okay, if I can play music, and typically music itself paid more than manual labor and put you in a better setting, so there was a motivation to develop and explore that. So bass became something that it was a natural voice for him, he found too. And that's something about being an instrumentalist. You typically gravitate to something where that seems to be your voice.
Mm-hmm. I had an uncle who used to sing, was singing bass, so my ear was attuned to the bass line, and that sort of brought me into the feeling of the bass. Bass was an accompanying instrument. I felt strongly about the accompaniment of an instrument in a group, whether it be a band, trio, or in the background. The bass was the basic thing. It's the foundation of all of the rest of the music.
It's interesting that he wound up playing sort of really supportive roles, both as an instrumentalist and as a manager. They're both kind of, they're underpinning and underlying everything that's going on, but not necessarily in the foreground.
And absolutely, which probably one can say, looking at the bass and management, that it's a natural transition there. And also him as an instrumentalist in his skill set, he made the declaration that he wasn't a strong soloist. His thing was really the support. Mm-hmm. So that really became the thread and the thrust there that continued to guide him down the path. When John decided to make the change to managing, he also discovered there that his dealings or contracts over the phone with those presenters had one tone, face-to-face was another tone.
Mm-hmm. When people realized that he was black.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important to point out that he was really kind of alone in being one of the first black managers, right?
He was. He was actually being lured by Joe Glazier to be part of Joe's staff there. And Joe managed Louis Armstrong and also Lionel Hampton. But it would have been one of those typical things. You got the structure, the white leadership, and John would have been subservient to that. And I think John also realized that he wanted to change the dynamic between management and artist, that he truly felt that his approach was better serving the artist. And it really, as I look at it, through the progression of his talent that he managed and the way he went about doing it, actually I see it was, because he was a very much advocate for his artists to the extent where they got their publishing rights. He made sure that his artists were treated at a level that they should have been, and that wasn't necessarily the case all the time. Mm-hmm. So he's a trailblazer.
Whenever we went into the studio to record, no matter what group I was with, when a song came up, I noticed that the producers would always say, "Who wrote this song?" And they'd say, "Well, I wrote the song." And nobody ever said anything about publishing the song. So they'd say, "Okay, well, you wrote the song, a sign right here, we'll publish it for you. We'll, you know, that's it, sign your name here." Yeah. And you just signed away your publishing rights to the producer or the record company or whatever entity that you were working with at the time. And I said, "Well, you know, you're giving away something, because there's earnings to be made from the use of this material by yourself and by other people." Now, I didn't go to school. I didn't find out anything about it. I found out about this kind of like the hard way, or you might say by experience.
Do you think that people identify with John Levy even more so, I guess, because he wasn't famous? He's not like a Duke Ellington or at the level of like Ella Fitzgerald in terms of his recognition?
I think that's a great question. I would say yeah. I would say yeah, because he developed his talent. And it's something that anybody can do today. It's not, one would say, okay, a Duke or Ella, that's a God-given talent, you know, born with it. And that's probably another topic there. But John developed he had a vision, he developed that craft. And it shows that any of us can do that. It gives it a sense of real terms there. It's not this goal there that seems unreachable. It's a very reachable goal there. And the impact is very substantial. What he has done will continue to live on. And I think that says to anybody who's looking at John is that I just have to come up with my vision of what I want, and then I just have to pursue it and keep going down that path there and be true to myself.
That's a great lesson.
As long as I'm here, John's story is a lifelong story. it's something that I'll continue to find great inspiration, an opportunity to share, and hopefully continue to learn. I mean, it's an ongoing learning process for me too.
In this episode, we explored the fascinating story of John Levy, the first Black personal manager in jazz. Thanks to Ken Kimmery for taking the time to talk with us today. If you have questions for future episodes, let us know. You can find us, along with tons of free learning resources, at historyexplorer.si.edu. Music for this episode, from the Underscore Orchestra and the George Shearing Quintet. This podcast is made possible by a generous grant from the Verizon Foundation.